I'm happy to talk about one of our sponsors, great sponsor, good friend, Vinny Brand, owns the Stress Factory in New Brunswick. The website is stressfactory.com. Vinny Brand runs one of the great comedy clubs, honestly, in the country. Not only does he have A-list comics coming in almost every single week, but the show is great. The food is fantastic. The staff, the service, there's parking right next door. If you've not discovered the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, you've got to get there. Go to stressfactory.com and buy your tickets. It's a great night out, reasonable cost, absolutely hilarious entertainment, great food and hospitality. Stressfactory.com.
Looking for a car, new or used? This is Jay Black to tell you there's no better destination than our friends at the Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, located on Route 202 and 31 in Flemington and at Flemington.com. Here you will find 16 automotive brands, plus over 500 available certified pre-owned vehicles to fit every budget. You'll get the financing, the trade-in value, and the credit you need, and dependable vehicle service maintenance that delivers peace of mind. Choose from Ford, Lincoln, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Cadillac, Infiniti, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, BMW, and Subaru. Shop them all, knowing every Flemington Car and Truck Country location has earned the coveted dealer-rated customer satisfaction award for 2017 based on your reviews. The Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, an honest, straightforward organization that has been satisfying customers for over 40 years. Family, independent, not corporate. Visit any of their 8 dealership locations on routes 202 and 31 in Flemington or at Flemington.com.
All right, so we're recording all of this, and this is the podcast.
Yeah, I think we just...
This is how we typically start.
We just let background noise happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like all these thousands of people came out, Jessica, for the big award show.
I know. Look at all of them up there in the rafters.
I'm surprised Bill actually went through with the tuxedo. Hey, Aaron Lawler, you're here.
Do you remember his tuxedo story about his tailor?
Yeah. The fact that he has a non-Asian tailor, that's money. He has money.
Well, he
He's
found
got like
him
Giuseppe as his tailor.
He was driving around wearing his tux and was like, I need to tailor this tux. I'm going to race in and ask
you, your tailor's
name. They have the ability to fix my tux. That's the most Princeton story you've ever told.
That's how I found my dry cleaner.
Is that
is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Is that a real I tied this tie.
Is that the tux?
Yeah.
That's the tux.
No, this is a new tux. That tux eventually went the other way. But that's how it happened. Now, all right, so what I'm going to do now is start this podcast officially.
This is the DJ.
This is so we have a special guest, Jay. This is podcast number episode 43.
Yeah.
I am Bill Spadia here with my co-hosts Jay Black and Jessica Nutt. And we have a live studio audience today. So just give it up for yourself.
Look at all those people. My goodness.
All right. So this podcast started the way most of them start, completely disjointed, unorganized.
Right.
We have rules and a structure for the actual Millens. Our special guest host is Vinny Brand.
Vinny Brand's here.
Vinny Brand.
And he's thrilled to be
here. He's already started drinking. Now, this podcast, Vinny, just so you're clear, is something that the good folks can download and subscribe afterward. It will be released in what, 2 weeks?
This will release in 2 weeks. The Millens will release.
Millens next week.
They were released last week.
So, Jay, who is our special guest? You were in Vegas.
Before we start, let me do something.
We've already started, actually.
Yeah. I know.
We're in the middle of starting.
Vinny, we've already started. Vinny. All right, go ahead.
It is. All right. Because what's going to happen? Can I have your undivided attention for a second, Jill Myra, and everybody. And thank you. Let me say up front, thank you for coming. But in order to do this effectively and be entertaining, we probably need them to stop talking amongst themselves.
Oh, is that what was important?
Yes.
I think we would try
very hard to be entertaining, but when Joe Myra waltzes in here late and then has to say hello to everybody, and everyone's amazed.
Did Jill Myra wreck it?
Oh, sorry, she's right back there.
Where is Jill?
She's still talking.
Jill, have you said hello to everyone in the room yet? All right, get over to this table. Everyone say hi to Jill.
Hi,
give her
Jill.
A big hug and a kiss.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Jill Myra, everybody. All right, so This, Vinny, we are already now in the middle of episode 43.
I think Vinny missed his calling. I think he should have been a substitute teacher.
Here's what we can't do, though. We can't have the podcast just kind of bleed into every other podcast. So we're going to have to stop this one.
Yeah.
Because we've got a special guest.
I think the first thing we have to do is understand that if we don't stop them from talking, it's going to sound like when you air this and that woman back there,
well,
very sweet woman, asked me what is a podcast. I'm going to explain that in a minute. If we don't stop them from talking, it's going to sound like a conversation in a subway. So to that lovely woman right there, let me explain to you what a podcast is. A podcast is
a radio
show.
Wait, who doesn't know what a podcast is?
Huh? That woman right there?
Oh, all right. That's okay. It's okay. I'm not trying to call you out. Yeah.
All right. Oh, hold on 1 second. Is this mansplaining or explaining? I need to be clear.
If it's mansplaining,
we can't have it.
Let me explain to you what a podcast is.
#MeToo
is a radio show on the internet. You can download it and listen to it. And it's without the interruptions of broadcast radio. And specifically, I mean without the organization, money, or talent that goes behind radio. It is just... it's a free speech format. So Bill, for example, who is not allowed to curse on air, but I've hung out with Bill. He has the mouth of a truck driver. He can do that on this podcast if he so chose. And so a podcast is a private radio show.
I'm not cursing tonight, though.
Huh?
I'm planning on not cursing tonight.
Yeah, he doesn't curse. He only curses when it's him and I in a car and he's drunk and I'm driving him home from a bad night at the barbecue joint.
Who invited Vinny?
So, and just so you know, unlike New Jersey 101.5, where you do speak 4 minutes every 2 hours, if I'm not, right? Did I get that timing right?
Well, you need the traffic and weather.
Right. So you come in, we're talking about...
And there's a little news in there.
Here's my impression of you. We're talking about Phil Murphy. Oh, wait, I got to go. That's about right. We get to talk for an extended period of time here on The Melons.
Yeah. So you can download this podcast by going to iTunes and looking for Speaking Millennial.
Or NJ1015.com. That
or you can download it from NJ1015.com.
Or we're also available on the dark net. You can go there and use Bitcoin to buy this and also heroin. We are available on the dark web as well. Get your onion browser.
You could also charge it to your Sears charge card, which is not a bad play.
No.
Because Sears will not be around to collect that money in about 6 hours.
That's actually really good financial. All right, so guys, let me just interrupt you, and I appreciate all the banter. It's excellent. We have to record two podcasts in the next 13 minutes.
Okay, so...
Start the show.
Let's introduce... Okay,
so this podcast is episode 43.
Episode 43, DJ Eddie J.
DJ Eddie J. So just give us a little preview, Jay, so the good folks know what they're going to subscribe to.
So I invited him to my suite in Vegas, which was very nice, and he came... Unlike many of the people I invite,
who knows who DJ Eddie J is?
Nobody here.
Okay.
I would imagine.
I suspect low numbers of downloads on this one.
Here's what I'm going to say. I don't know the demographics of the NJ1015 listenership, but I think EDM music is probably not in the Venn diagram. I feel like that's probably not their music. But that's the thing. You get exposed to new things on Speaking Millennials. So this is DJ Eddie J. He used to work at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club. He was actually taken in. Both his parents died before he was 21, and he had 6 younger siblings to take care of. And Brad Garrett actually brought him in, gave him a job, gave him benefits, took care of the family, because his dad was Brad Garrett's best friend. And now, after 7 years of working there, he's going to California to start his music career. So we interviewed him. We found out about his life. It's a very touching story.
That is the
story.
Most dramatic introduction I've ever heard from an EDM star. It's good.
And he records electronic music that I will listen to briefly to give a description of. My guess is you won't listen to it.
I will not.
My guess is, Jessica, you've already listened to it probably on the way over.
Yep.
You
know
way into EDM.
Yep. She's been rolling on
Molly since she got here.
All right, so we're going to just start that right here.
We're starting right now.
And
thank you, Bill, Jessica, and Jay in the future, because we're going to be doing a wraparound here. Now, I'm here with Ed, and I would give the last name, but Ed, you realize that I don't know your last name.
That's hysterical, really.
I put it in my phone back when I first met you
yeah.
as Ed Brad Garrett.
Because that's the way
people,
I would...
A lot of people did.
Yeah, I would remember it that way because Ed was assistant manager?
Yeah, assistant manager.
Assistant manager there, and he would be the one that I would contact whenever I would come into town. Right. And, you know, when I'd land, I would text him annoyingly, like, I'm here, I'm waiting, and he would come pick me up. And then I would say, immediately take me to the whorehouse, and he would tell me he can't do that.
It's off the record.
Off the record.
It was, it was about a 45-minute drive. We made it work. Not any gas.
But yeah, so I have Ed Brett Garrett. So I need your last name.
So my biological is Conover, Ed Conover. But I usually don't give my last name because I normally introduce myself as Eddie J to people because that's my stage persona.
Okay, wait. Oh yeah, we're still recording. I forgot that it goes out your stage persona. Eddie J. Why that? Because you admire me.
Exactly.
So you're like, I'll take Jay's name as my surname.
Exactly.
No, so Eddie J, is there any reason for that? Or
My middle name is James, and my mom always just called me, when I was in trouble,
right,
she'd call me Eddie J. Mm-hmm. And so all my friends growing up would all clown me and just call me Eddie J.
Call
so
you Eddie J?
Stuck. It was just kind of the name.
All right, so yeah, I want to talk to you about the music, because I got here, and I texted you immediately.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, Ed, I'm here, like I always do. And you said, I don't know if you know this, but I'm not working at Brad Garrett's anymore, the comedy club. Right. I am leaving to pursue my dream.
Yeah.
Which, okay, you're going to L.A.
Going to L.A.
You do a type of music. I believe it's EDM.
EDM, hip-hop. There's a mixture in there.
Okay.
It's mostly hip-hop, but there is a lot of EDM influence.
Okay, I'm just making sure because I am 41.
No, you're good, man.
So you have to understand. I keep thinking you're saying the employee dining room. Because you know, I keep doing this like, oh, wow, they have electronic music down there now?
It is Vegas.
You never know. So, well, explain to me what, like, it's EDM influenced by hip-hop.
Yeah, it's primarily hip-hop, but, like, actually at this exact moment, I mean, I'm working on an EP that is EDM influenced just because so much of the city that I've grown up in here in Vegas is kind of the EDM mecca.
This is a music scene here in Vegas.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty diverse. The primary pulse of the music scene, I would say, comes from the nightclubs.
Okay.
And that is primarily EDM, electronic dance music driven.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, when you think like Vegas, you think showbiz.
Yes.
You know, you think like, well, this is where they stop off to, you know, to get good so they can go to Branson.
Right.
You know, like there's a lot of old timey kind of stuff here.
Yeah.
A lot of people doing, you know, shall we say dated impressions, you know. So the idea that there is a music scene that's outside of that is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that it comes up from the nightclubs and sort of influences the locals. But you're not staying. You're leaving.
It's a great city as far as, and the scene is fantastic for those who are not really trying to branch out beyond anything.
Okay.
So there's not as much, I would say, growth potential here.
Gotcha.
It's kind of a city where you go to get your roots set in and figure out what you're going to do, and it's always just kind of a side thing.
Yeah, the only growth here that happens regularly is breast enhancement.
Yes.
I would say there's a lot of that. So far you've avoided it.
I have.
So you're going to L.A., and well, tell me, let's go back, because here's the thing. The name of this podcast is Speaking Millennial.
Right.
And one of the things that we do is we talk to millennials like yourself to figure out what's going on, because I'll be honest with you, I'm Generation X.
Okay.
Right. I've talked about this on the podcast before. It goes, baby boomers, who are the worst. If you figured out how to listen to a podcast, baby boomer, I'm coming for you. You're terrible. You've ruined everything. And don't say that millennials ruin everything. They've ruined a lot. Don't get me wrong. Avocado toast is something that honestly needs to be talked about. But you baby boomers are the worst. Then there's the best generation.
Right.
The greatest generation, as I like to call it.
Self-titled, though.
Generation X.
Yes.
No, greatest generation, the actual greatest generation. let's be honest. You can't have that much racism and be the greatest. You know, we fought World War II segregated. You're not the greatest. You're good. You're the goodest generation. I'm the greatest generation. You know why? We don't give a shit about anything, Ed. Yeah, I remember we protested one thing when I was in college. They were changing the name from Trenton State to the College of New Jersey. There was one half-hearted protest where we all went out. We're like, eh, and then we left because who cares, really? That was my generation. I think we need a lot more who cares.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, the millennials. But here's the thing. You are an interesting millennial because we've talked about this a lot. You have ambition.
I mean, like, you are not just content to sit somewhere and do nothing. And even, you know, EDM, you would think, like, basically all you do is smoke marijuana and, like, sure. press buttons. But you're always working. You're always hustling.
Yeah.
Tell me why that is. What is it about you? What's your past? How did that shape your philosophy?
To be honest with you, I was kind of raised a little bit differently. Like, my past is pretty diverse. My parents came from music on two different spectrums. My dad was actually, you're from Jersey, right?
Yeah.
My dad was from your neck of the woods.
Okay.
And he was a rock DJ. My mom was a Polynesian dancer.
the same old story. Yes, and we've all heard it. I heard it, a dime a dozen, rock DJ, Polynesian dancer. Just come on.
Exactly.
You want to talk cliche, Ed?
Yeah. Jeez. Sorry, I wish I had better stories for you.
Yeah.
But then throughout, like, they were also very religious people later in their life when I was being raised. So I grew up in church. My parents then became pastors. I was actually an ordained minister at 17.
Really?
Yeah, I was a youth pastor.
You were just marrying your friends left and right.
I do have a license to marry anybody, if you know.
You know what? I bet you have to get, like, a youth pastor license to marry young if you're in a church where you can't have premarital sex.
Yes.
I would imagine people are, like, 13, like, let's do it. Like, we could just, you know, because you're going insane, you know? Right. That's people go like, oh, why did people get so married so young back in the day? You had to.
Right.
You know, you're 14, you're going nuts, you need to have sex. Yeah. You'd say like, Ed, could you marry us and then maybe divorce us in about 12 minutes?
Right, exactly.
Right?
And so get this over with.
You're a 17-year-old pastor.
Right. So I think to make a long story short, so much of my upbringing, because of what I was doing and because of the background of my family, I spent the majority of my time around my parents' friends.
Right.
So learning from your generation, there wasn't a lot of tolerance for complacency.
Gotcha.
And not to talk down about any of the millennials, because there's some fantastically talented, driven, and just uber successful millennials in this generation. It's just kind of a weird coin with us, where we're either, I feel like, just in my observation, we're either all the way in, well, we're kind of all the way out. And so it's very strange.
See, here's my thing. I don't mind the all the way out. Yeah. I mind the all the way out that is mad that they're not all the way in.
Yes, it's a mindset. You can change that.
Right. It's so weird because, like, you know, I find it in comedy. And you've actually, you know, you were assistant manager at Brad Garrett's place for 6 years. So you've seen every stripe of comedian.
Yeah.
But, I mean, comedy, music, whatever, there's a lot of people that are just like, well, how come I'm not rich and famous yet?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've done 7 gigs. Why haven't I been discovered? You know, the grind is what people don't understand about entertainment.
They don't also appreciate the journey either, and understanding that, like, it's one of those things that I feel like that's probably more rewarding than actually getting to the end result because of all the lessons you can learn along the way. And being at the comedy club, I think that that's something that's kind of helped me in my own aspirations, is I spent a lot of time around entertainers like yourself, some of which are as organized and talented and driven as yourself, and some who aren't.
Yeah.
And so you kind of learn both sides of the business.
Yeah, you've probably seen a bunch of guys come in who are really talented, but showed up late or drunk.
Can't get out of their own way.
Yeah,
you know, that derails a lot of the ambition that you have right away.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm glad that you said that I'm organized. That's by the way, if I would say that compared to other comics, I have my stuff together, but that shows you how bad comics are. It's not a compliment to me. Even with all my issues, I'm still in the top 12% of comics who have their stuff together. So you got into EDM, or you got into music, you know, from your whole life? You played piano?
I grew up in the church. I grew up singing in the church choir.
Wow.
So I was singing gospel music from a very young age.
It's like Elvis's story.
Similar. Yeah. Similar. Not the same. Similar.
Yeah, a little bit.
I got into hip-hop, which... So the church that we grew up in before my parents started a church was a primarily black church.
Right.
So most of the people in my life came from that background. So there was a lot of influence from that style of music, and just the entire African-American, just black culture in general was kind of a big influence in my life. That was my primary social group.
So it was. So was that, were you odd man out, or were you accepted very easily?
A little bit of both. It was kind of a mixed bag. I was a really nerdy kid growing up,
right?
So like show tunes and, you know, and all that stuff, and so they liked me because I was cool, like I could hang. But it wasn't until, like, I'd say maybe after high school that I kind of found who I was and all of it. And then, you know, I don't know, the influence of my black friends, I really felt like taught me so much about just learning to accept who I am and not so much caring about what the outside, because there is a stigma, I think, that
of being the white boy hanging out with the black kids.
Well, both too. Yeah. I mean, I think that being just a minority in general, there's a lot of stigmas that come with that. And so they kind of taught me this mentality of you can't care about what so many people think about you. Yeah. You're going to be an individual regardless.
And it's you can't change what they think about you exactly. Anyway.
No matter how hard you try in some cases.
Well, do you find as you were going into the music industry, because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like EDM, there's a lot of white guys who do EDM.
Yeah.
Hip hop, I would say, primarily more an African American type thing.
It's a black dominated game,
right? Sure. So, do you find like if you say, "Oh, I'm into hip hop," do you get like sideways looks
all the time?
Like,
it's actually one of the hardest things that I've kind of had to learn to overcome. I would take it really personal; it would almost become a chip on my shoulder when I first started, because I've been writing music for a long time, and I do feel like I have an affinity for it, and so the automatic need to like have to prove myself right out the gate frustrated me in a lot of cases, and I think it was a motivating factor, but early on maybe not the best motivating factor for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, I have found honestly, you know, you've known me for a long time, and just in the last year I've gone to a lot of therapy, and I have taking enough Wellbutrin to I quote my doctor, kill a mule. So hey. I don't know if that's a good amount or not. But I found that as I've sort of embraced positivity, there's like a difference between I'll show you and, let's see if I can show myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because that...
Definitely. And that's, I think that's an ever-evolving journey. I think no matter what you do in life. I mean, 2017 for me was a big what-the-fuck kind of year.
Really?
And so just across the board, I think a lot of people sympathized with that, but... learning
what happened concept. In 2017 that was kind of bad.
I don't put my finger on it.
I'm trying to think. I don't remember. It seems like politically we've been very stable.
Sure.
You know, emotionally we've been all right. There wasn't anything bad violence wise. Ed, you millennials just take things too seriously. So 2017 bad year or interesting year, hard year.
Yeah, it was a coin for sure. But I think that the biggest lesson that I gathered from all of it was that journey that we're talking about of finding the self-love and all that. It's an ever-evolving thing. And I think once you can lock that in and whatever you do in life, once you can understand that you do have to be your own biggest fan from a very genuine place, I think there's a freeing aspect to your creativity.
Yeah, there's this interesting thing where I thought because I was a raging narcissist, I had self-love.
Yeah.
But no. I was an asshole at the center of a very dark universe.
Everything you're doing is to prove to yourself that you add up.
I'm worthy. I'm going to do this. And all those people who think I can't do it, I'm going to show them. And once you sort of get to a place where you're like, okay, I'm okay. I still love this thing that I'm doing.
Sure.
And I'm going to do it out of love instead of out of bitter hate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was actually worried because I thought bitter hate was the best driver.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Rocky IV. You know, I mean, Drago kills Apollo. Spoiler alert. I'm sorry. Don't tweet at us.
Probably a lot of millennials who haven't seen that.
Yeah. They're probably, what the F, man? Come on. Rocky, Apollo gets killed. Rocky climbs a mountain by himself in Russia somehow. And by the way, those of you that watch Rocky IV, you can't be a Trump fan and a Rocky IV fan because Rocky IV. Russians are the bad guys, all right? Deal with it. So do you like that I'm talking directly into the phone
when I do that? Yeah,
I'm just like as if I'm speaking to them directly. You know, Rocky IV, Drago kills Apollo. I'm angry. I'm going to work out in a barn, and that's how you do it.
Right.
But no, it's more Rocky III, where you're with your friends and your family, and it's nice. It's wholesome. Wholesome, not hatred. That's a better driver.
I think that what's the payoff at the end? I mean, at the end of the day, I had a very interesting thing happen at the very end of last year where it had kind of been a year that came full circle, and I had made the decision that I was going to move to LA, and I've only lived here. I'm very close with my siblings. Not to bring things down, but just to give a little background, my parents passed between the time that I was 18 and 21, so I lost both of them in a short span of time. I'm the oldest of seven kids. So my brothers and sisters have been like a very big defining point in my life.
Well, sure, you became their guardian, really.
I mean,
you were there to, I mean, this is like party of seven.
And you're
responsible.
With plenty of help from other people, but yes. And
it doesn't matter how many people help. That's a big thing to take on. It's a lot to work through.
Definitely. And that kind of also added to the chip on the shoulder, I guess. But once I had made the decision I'm going to move, there was so much uncertainty. And again, you know, you're always struggling with this false sense of it's the narcissism that you were talking about. But I had some friends who decided to do a really nice thing, and they bought a journal for me to take with. And a ton of people that I knew wrote just kind of well wishes towards
me. Oh, that's super sweet.
And when I started reading them, this thing clicked in my mind where I went, man, for the last 5 years, all I've sought out to do is prove to the people that didn't believe in me why they should.
Right.
And I didn't even realize along this journey how many people actually did believe in me.
Right.
And it was like my energy was so quick. My battery would drain so much faster because there was really nothing sustaining it.
You're expelling without taking anything in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And focusing on all the wrong reasons.
And by the way, they asked me to contribute a page of the journal. I ding it around to it. But you know how I feel.
I'll bring it. I got it.
But no, I agree with you. You know, this is something my wife and I talk about all the time, which was, you know, before I got better, I was just driven by this darkness.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, you know, once the light kind of turns on, it's like I can I think there's a false belief among comics. I don't know if it's true among musicians, but there's this false belief that the sadder I am, the more creative I am.
I think that that's true in almost any genre of entertainment, because I think that there's a weird stigma that, like, Our pain is our well.
Right.
And that's true, but it's like, how do you vocalize your pain? Like, what's the end goal here? Are we trying to build people up? Are we trying to leave them better? Or are we just trying to depress the fuck out of everybody?
And once you get all that you want, you know, if you're still hurting,
yeah.
Like you said, what's the end point? What are you doing?
Right.
Why are you even doing this?
You know, it's like Eminem. Like, and I've kind of always had a love-hate relationship with his music.
Well, I'm sure because of being the white boy and
he's a very stigmatized artist as well, but it was like, you know, after a certain point, what are we getting to here? You're still struggling with the same. You're still talking about the same things. You're still bitter. You're still angry. So what? Where's the evolution? Where's the development?
When are you going to leave me? He seems to be getting better, right? Or I don't know. I haven't been paying attention. Did he?
I don't know if politics is his strongest lane.
Probably not. You know. Well, you know, this actually brings up something that I'm curious about, because there's a lot of talk in the millennial culture about appropriation.
Absolutely.
You hear that all the time.
I've been accused of it.
And this is just, it drives me nuts, because I don't understand, because I always thought, you know, if you like something, why wouldn't you just want to be a part of that thing, regardless of where you come from? Like, I remember reading Lee Iacocca's book when I was in high school, because I did not get laid. And he was talking about...
Iacocca was brilliant, though.
Yeah, he was, right? And he had this whole conversation about Italian pie, you know, pizza. He would go home when he was a little boy, and his friends would make fun of him about pizza. Yeah. You know, and it wasn't until World War II, the Americans are going through, the greatest generation, are going through Italy, and they're eating pizza, and they come home and they tell their friends and family, like, holy shit, you got to eat this thing from Italy called pizza.
Right.
And he goes, isn't it great now? There's Pizza Hut everywhere.
Right.
He wasn't like, that's my thing.
Sure.
Don't eat pizza. I invented it. It's like, no, I'm happy that this thing in my culture is now everywhere.
Yeah.
And I know this is going to come off as insensitive. I don't understand it. And I think I want to get where they're coming from. When does it become appropriation? In your mind, when's it appropriation? When is it just you're part of this thing?
I think that it's one of those things. To me, it's always been something where if I have to ask myself if I'm appropriating, I probably am.
Gotcha.
And so I do try to toe that line very carefully. You know, I try to pay attention to, am I doing this because this is what hip-hop culture is, or am I doing this because this is me?
Gotcha.
And so... I feel like appropriation, to me, at least in my interpretation of it, is once it's no longer genuine and you're having to almost force something, then I feel like there is a slippery slope there. I do think that there is two sides to it, though. I think that some people find an identity in being that, stick up the ass white person mentality of like, you can't do this and you're appropriating this.
Right.
So I don't know. It's kind of a weird... I struggle with it too, but normally if I have to ask if I'm appropriating, I just assume I am.
You know what? It kind of reminds me of how comics will think about what's hacky.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, like, if you think it's hacky, it probably is.
Right. And if you're like, well, if you say all airplane humor is hacky, that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But if you're saying my particular take on food portions are too small, is that hacky? Yeah, probably is hacky. But if you're personalizing it, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it again, I think that there's probably like the ironic appropriation that white guys do. You know, like when you see white guys with the, you know, going as for Halloween as a hip hop guy. You know, of course. That's kind of gross, and I kind of understand that. But like somebody who was born into it, you know, or you know, loves it in an organic, natural way. Yeah, I guess.
Well, and that again, I think is the other side of it. Like, if you were to look at me on a normal day, like you've seen me at work, and how I dress at work, how I dress outside of work is significantly different. I mean, I have jewelry, I have all these other things, and if you were to see me kind of on the street with a bunch of my friends, you'd think, oh, this is a wannabe hood white kid,
right?
But if you got to know me and understand why I love hip hop so much, and the pain and the frustration and the way that they voiced it was something that really touched my heart in some of the darkest seasons of my life. And it was an avenue that was so real when I was growing up in religion that stopped becoming real after I saw so much tragedy happen.
Right.
It became something else where it was like, I'm not appropriating.
I'm living.
Exactly. It saved my life in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, there's specific albums that I can remember playing in my darkest times where I was like, that portion, that I can't relate to the exact struggle, but I can relate to some of the mindset behind it.
Gotcha.
And that, to me, really was kind of why I love hip hop so much.
Right. I mean, there's, you know, the line between admiration and appropriation should be, you know,
yes,
internal.
That's
somebody
a great,
else.
Great way to put it. Yeah. But again, if you have to force it,
right,
then you're probably crossing that line.
Yeah, it's if you're doing Robin Williams' old B-boy routine, probably
And Robin Williams can get away with it, as most of you guys can, because you guys are funny.
Yeah, but
you're professionals.
I always wanted to, before Robin Williams tragically passed, I always wanted to tell him, you know, hip hop has evolved since Run DMC,
because
he just kept doing the same Run DMC guy.
Yeah.
So you're going to LA.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan? What's the plan out there? What are you going to do?
So as far as the plan for LA, I, in the past couple of years out here, I found a lot of enjoyment in creating showcases and booking shows. One of the things that I learned at the club from the comics was what's your niche outside of just your shtick, your act.
Right.
You've all got your thing, but what are you doing outside of it that brings value to your profession? How are you standing out?
I deal meth. That's what I deal. I use.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good money maker. I sell it after the show, and you know, I have so much energy. Yeah. I have so many things I want to tell you.
I mean, so much more done.
Yeah. No, I've organized wires for the last 36 hours. Right. I think I'm in a good spot.
Yeah. So finding that for me out here was in show promoting. And doing some other side hustles within the music business. So the first thing that we're working on right now is we're getting a couple locations together to do a couple monthly showcases at some different locations just to get my name out there.
Right.
But I've also got a ton of friends in the music business out there that work in studios. So getting
can help you get time and stuff,
et cetera. I mean, it's all, you know. It just kind of varies, I guess.
You know, I think a lot of people don't understand this, and I've spent enough time in Vegas now to know this. This town is nothing but hustle.
I mean,
like, even the big shows, you know, even the things that you think would sell out on their own. I mean, like, every night there's 10,000 people trying to get you to go somewhere.
Yeah, you got 250 shows a night. Not counting any out-of-town shows that are, like, actual acts that are touring and coming through the city. So to be able to draw in this town is a gift. But it all comes down to charisma, and I think it's one of those things that if people like you, then they're going to support to a different level.
This is why I don't have anyone supporting
that's
me.
Not true.
I am very unlikable.
That's not true at all. So the big thing for me is, like, to me, I think it's a numbers game. How many faces can you get in front of in a week?
Right.
How many faces can you get in front of in a day? And how many relationships can you create?
Right.
Also something that I think my generation has a tendency to be polar opposite with, where it's like they're either great at relationships or they're really bad at them.
Right.
And so,
you know, or they sort of live in that world where it's fake Instagram relationships,
yeah,
where
it's all surface.
Yeah, I have 26,000 followers. Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
I mean, I guess it means you have some juice to get people to come to your shows.
Sure.
But if there's no actual connection there,
right,
then they're not going to.
Yeah. You need to be able to have people who are rooting for you and are willing to step out on a limb and say, no, not only am I rooting for you, but I'm willing to help. And so for me, that was why I decided to move to LA, because I felt like I could better put my hustle into creating those relationships.
Well, where the industry is.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, for as nice and great as Vegas is, there's no industry here that can see you and sort of put you into that
next
level.
Well, I mean, that was exactly the last straw for me, was You know, we've been doing shows out here for a long time.
Yeah, and you were getting really successful. A lot of people coming out.
We sold out Hard Rock Casino, one of their premier venues in town. It was like 750 people.
That's amazing.
And thank you. And we were very excited about it. And through all the industry contacts that I had made, and then I had a couple friends trying, the consistent answer that we kept getting is, why would we fly to Vegas to see somebody we don't know when we can go up the street and see somebody we don't know?
Right, right.
And so, to me, it was like, damn, like, we've been putting all this work into the wrong place. Not in the wrong place, like, we've built relationships out here, but now we have to take that same mentality to a place and just kind of do it all over again. And I'm excited about it. I think it's a much different pulse out there.
It's the same thing when I hear from people, like, you know, trying to get in a club in, like, Pittsburgh. I go, well, okay.
Right.
That's good. You got to work. I get that. But you do realize that no one from CBS is like, let's go to Pittsburgh this Thursday and see what's rolling, and maybe we get a new TV show out of it. It doesn't really work that way. You got to go to where the industry is.
Yeah. And so much of it is who you know, as less than music. I mean, guys are getting put on in the game now that their first time performing is at an award show.
That's crazy.
And they've never done that before. But it's all hustle, man. I mean, it's just getting your record.
It does seem like, it seems like there's two particular strains of hip hop just from me outside looking in. Again, 41-year-old white guy talking about hip hop. I'm not sure if that's what you're tuning in for. But it seems like there is this brand of, like, all studio creations.
Yeah.
And then there's the brand of actual live performers.
Absolutely.
And they never the twain shall meet, you know, like the live performers, different kind of vibe.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
And you're live. You're a live guy. You perform.
Absolutely. I have a band. I have dancers. I have the whole nine. And so that, to me, is where I feel like my primary strength is. And that's where more than my strength, that's my therapy.
Right. Oh, God.
We've talked about that a million times.
You go up there, it's the only time. Sometimes you get sick. You're sick to your stomach, or you've got the flu.
I had food poisoning 3 weeks ago at the last show I did here in town.
Then they introduce your name. You go up and you're fine.
And you're sick as a dog as soon as
you do 90 minutes, you walk off, you throw up for the rest of the night. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's the only therapy that truly works for me.
Right.
And I see people, too, like you're talking about. So it's like, you know, so that's where a lot of my effort goes into. But you do have to, it's a weird catch-22. You have to have a product that people are willing to listen to without seeing you.
Right, first. Right.
So, you know, which is another reason why the move to LA to me made sense, out here there's so much, I'm so invested in everything outside of music here. Right. I have to get away from it. And I've had to kind of now divorce it in a sense so that
You mean like focus just on the music because there's so much going on?
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, this is where my life's been. And it's been such a roller coaster out here. It doesn't take much to just pull me away from music and refocus into, you know, family.
You could say it, bitches. I'm sorry. I wanted to say that like a hip hop guy would.
Yeah. It was close.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap up because I could keep talking forever, but I think a half hour is about where Bill's level of attention. He's my co-host. Jessica's probably riveted because I'm finally talking to a young person on Speaking Millennials. Very rare that we actually get young people on the show. So two quick questions.
Yeah, yeah.
One, tell me about the EP. When is that coming out? What's that all about? Where can people get it? Yeah. Is it ready to go? Or if not ready for the EP, tell me where we can go to get your music.
So first and foremost, if you are interested in hearing some of the music, just follow me on any of the social media platforms, and it's at Eddie J Music, EddieJayY Music, and that's universal. I'm on every single platform.
Just go
except
find
for Snapchat. I don't understand it. It drives me nuts.
Friendster, MySpace, all the big ones.
Exactly.
I'm totally with you. And the Facebook. You're into it.
The Facebooks.
Yeah. I'm with you guys.
So you can go there and follow me on there. And I'm free all day. You can interact with me. I like talking to people, meeting people. And then you can find the links to my music there as well. I have an album out right now called If It All Falls. Really proud of it. A lot of, I think, a very diverse body of work. It's got rock influence, EDM influence.
So we're going to link to that. Cool. If you've downloaded this podcast, there's a link there. If you're listening to it at the NJ1015 page, we'll have a link there for it. So just click that and listen.
Thanks.
Give it a shot.
And then once you listen to it, message me and let me know what you think.
Well, you're going to give me a track, right? We'll play
that
right after this interview. Perfect. So stick around for the interview. You're going to after the interview, you'll hear a track from Eddie J Music. And last thing, we met at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Two quick questions. One, do you think we'll get Brad to be able to do this? Do you think he would do this?
Man, if you can pin him down long enough, yeah, absolutely.
Maybe I'll just hold it out real fast and go, hey, tell me a lot about millennials. Go, Brad, go.
Just walk into the green room and just have it on record.
Yeah, just see what happens. But two, tell me about that because, you know, you and Brad, you're close, right? You
guys... Yeah, Brad was my dad's best friend.
And that's...
So he's technically my godfather.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he's probably the most incredible individual to, one, have as you know, adopted family, pretty much as family, and then two, to work for. I mean, he's just an incredible guy. Biggest heart, most generous individual I've ever met.
Yeah, it's one of those things where show business, especially, like, you know, you don't want to be the Sammy Davis, like, yeah. Oh, I love this guy, he's the best. You know, the Sammy, lie kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some genuinely good, nice people, and he is one of them.
Yeah.
And he kind of took your family under his wing.
He assumed ownership of our family in a lot of ways and took care of both my parents all the way through them passing, and like was just continues to be a huge, not just financial blessing, but a friend and an uncle. So that's he's an incredible guy. And he's got a show that he's working on right now. On Showtime, I believe.
He's doing Dying Up Here, right? He's doing a whole thing.
Exciting for him.
That's fantastic.
A lot of millennials will see him and they go, oh, that's the guy from Fargo.
Yeah, right. You don't hear Everybody Loves Raymond.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Right? I've gotten that more and more. Where you go, Everybody Loves Raymond. They're like, oh, is that a show? And you're like, oh, how old am I? How did this happen? Where am I?
Yeah.
But yeah, he's, you know, as a dramatic actor.
He's fantastic.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think comics are, because we're all like
serious. It comes from a dark place.
But not anymore for me.
No, exactly.
Because I'll give you some Wellbutrin on the way out.
Perfect.
I've been cooking it up in the...
I'll
might be meth, actually. I don't know. I've been awake for 175 hours, and I don't even know where I'm at right now. But yeah, Brad's a nice guy. Kevin Nealon, who's been on my podcast.
Also a great guy.
My podcast. Bill, don't pull that out. I meant all of our podcasts. But Kevin came on, and he's a guy that I've worked with a lot. And, you know, he's so nice that I would say on stage, like, he's either actually genuinely this nice or he's buttering me up for a kidney.
Yeah.
Like, that, because that's the only two options. Yeah. Like, he's either just a good guy or, like, 3 years from now, he's going to be like, hey, I'm going to be calling in this favor. We're a match. I don't know if you know that. And then I'm going to have to give up a kidney. Brad is kind of in that boat.
Definitely.
You know, just a good guy. Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy that you're – I'm sad you're leaving.
I won't be far from the scene, though, man. It's been a big part of my life.
You say that, but you're going to go, I've listened to Kid Rock. I know what happens when you go to Los Angeles. You become a cowboy. You're just going to be riding up and down the street all day.
Nah.
But I will miss you.
Nah, I appreciate it, man. And, likewise.
We are looking forward to listening to your music right after this. And go download his stuff and follow
it. Please. And guys, thank you for having me on the podcast. It means a lot. It's genuinely appreciate it.
I loved having you. Thank you so much. You, Eddie J, at Eddie J,
EddieJayY Music.
Listen to him, download him, love him. Need him. I'm just going to keep going until you get uncomfortable. I invited Ed back to the suite, and I had to say, like, we're at the signature where they put all the comics, and this is just his easiest way to meet. But I realized, in even today's fraught times, I have to be like, come to my suite. Like, ew. Like, no, I just meant come and we'll do the recording. I just would not. He didn't think that. I just, okay, we're leaving now. Goodbye. Thank you. Thanks for being on it.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Bottoms up on a champagne flute. Pour a glass to the past and the days of my youth. Jet lag, first class, kiss the Grammy Award. I bought a spot up the block to see the family more. Told my team it's just a matter of time. We kept our nose to the sky and our faith in the grind. What one man doing with all that power? When I step out the whip, all the flashbulbs shower. It's the moment I dreamed, kid, 4 years ago, man, it's the moment indeed. So many singles spinning, they should just crown a regime. GQ, Forbes list, Rolling Stone magazine. Got the girl in my dream and she get 2-1. So in case we die, we living life in a song. Cause the white picket fence ain't lavish enough. I got a taste for designer with a passion to stunt.
You want everything.
Bigger than
the wildest dreams.
All your dreams. Cause if the world's in your hands tonight, is it worth the fight? Is it worth the fight if the world's in your hands tonight? They say money will make a man
change. Says the man who ain't had to change to make a man change. Dream of pushing a range or an R8. Give me a year, bet I'll bag a playmate. Been in a dynasty, brick upon brick. 2 years ago and I ain't even have a nickel to flip. Cause I was stressing depression, I'm trying to keep it progressing. Cause every lesson a blessing, I put it all in the session. Now I smoke Arturo Fuente, Johnny walk on the rocks and pink lingerie. Priorities of a young prince in the burbs. May God love bread, smoke rivals and herbs. Cubans with the kush, party hurry in the mix. International dimes, talking dollars and cents. Shawty want me not to be too esteemed. Young, rich and well endowed, recipe to succeed. I'm running now on the life I'm trying to provide. Did I mistake my destiny for a pipe dream? Did I forsake the memory for a selfish scheme? Starting to identify with my demons, self-doubt and fear, closing in like the ceiling. Should I pop the whole prescription and just fuck it all? Hit the gas, hang a left and let the curtains fall. The weight of my city, the weight of my parents, the weight of my siblings is weighing all up on my appearance. I'm waiting for time, waiting in line. God, give me a sign. I've been pushing, struggling in my mind. Gotta hold on tight so I can put on right. But it can't, think it can't last one more night. Ah, guess it could all be worse, right? Like who's supposed to shine a light through the silent night? Mama said it's not the moment that defines you, but the legacy that's left when my time's through.
You want everything.
Window. Hey.
Shit.
Hey, officer.
Put your hands on the wheel where I can see them.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing on the side of the road here?
I was falling asleep while I was driving, so I just pulled over.
Uh-huh. You been drinking, son?
I had a couple beers earlier, one or two. At a friend's
one
party.
Or two?
Yes, sir, two. Yes, sir.
All right, listen. Shouldn't even be in this area, you understand?
Yes, sir.
You okay to drive?
Yes, sir.
You sure?
Yes, sir.
Hey, get the hell out of here. I don't want to see you anymore.
I appreciate it. You got it.
Shit.
And it was excellent. Great job, Jay.
No, wait, hold
right.
on.
Hey, Jay,
that was great interview.
Thank
Man,
you so
that
much.
Was awesome.
I covered all the bases.
So clearly we're faking it so we can put that in. How long is it?
It's 30 minutes.
All right, so I don't think we need a goodbye.
No, and just like my wife, you faked it to get it over with quickly.
Faked it. It's done. It was quick. We're out.
That was great, Jay.
All right, thank you for listening. I am Bill Spadia with my co-hosts, Jessica Knott and Jay Black, and, of course, our guest host, Vinny Brand, who said pretty much nothing on this particular episode, but
He's
we got another
tweeting.
One coming up.